M and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. A debt limit showdown on Capitol Hill as the U.S. is expected to hit it tomorrow. CBS's Scott McFarlane.
Tomorrow is when the Treasury Department begins taking its extraordinary measures, which means they'll stop making payments on some things it can pause payments on. Retiree benefits, pensions, some security reinvestments, things that it'll make good on later but can pause for now without any damage. That buys Congress time.
A former New Mexico Republican political candidate accused of hiring hitmen to shoot into the homes of Democratic rivals is being held without bond. CBS's Donya Backus.
Solomon Pena appeared on video for his first court hearing Wednesday. The former Republican candidate for the New Mexico State House is charged with multiple counts, including shooting at a home, aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and conspiracy. Investigators say Pena lost the November election in a landslide, but falsely argued the election was rigged. He refused to concede his race. Police say he then hired four hitmen to shoot at the homes of Democratic rivals, two state legislators, and two county officials.
A not guilty plea to murder and other charges is entered on behalf of the husband of a Massachusetts woman who's been missing since New Year's Day. CBS's Nancy Chen.
They say blood and knives were found in the couple's basement, and that just hours after Anna Walsh was last seen, Brian Walsh made a series of chilling Google searches on his son's iPad, including 10 ways to dispose of a dead body if you ever needed to. How long for someone to be missing to inherit? Can you throw away body parts? And can you be charged with murder without a body?
The nation now has its third black governor. CBS's Allison Keyes reports.
African-American dignitaries crowded the swearing-in for Maryland's new governor, Wes Moore, including Oprah Winfrey, who campaigned for him and introduced him at the ceremony.
Maryland is full to the brim with opportunity.
Moore says the day was about celebrating the state's collective future.
Our opportunity to begin this future is so bright, it is blinding.
Before his inaugural speech, Moore attended a wreath-laying ceremony at the Annapolis City Dock, which was once a regional slave port. Allison Keyes, CBS News.
Another day, another George Santos allegation. CBS's Caitlin Huey Burns reports the Republican congressman is now accused of scamming a disabled veteran who was trying to raise money for his dying dog's cancer treatment.
I knew I was being scammed.
Rich Ostoff, a homeless veteran, says Santos helped him raise $3,000 for his dying dog through his pet charity. But Ostoff says he never got the money from Santos, and his dog died 6 months later.
Diminished my faith in humanity.
Calls from CBS News to Santos district office in New York were forwarded to a neighboring congressman. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual Insurance.
As a Walgreens pharmacist, I talk with people all the time about little tips and tricks for filling their Medicare prescriptions, like taking advantage of Walgreens 90-day refills to save them a trip, or using Refill by Scan, which is super easy and right on your phone. And for anybody worried about prescription costs, I say, hey, we got you, with low-cost copays on many medications.
Let's talk about making things easier. Walgreens is here. Fill your way and save at walgreens.com/Medicare. See pharmacists for restrictions and exclusions.
If you came across someone struggling with hunger, how would you recognize them? Would you notice a 16-year-old boy who got his first job?
Not for extra spending money, but to help feed his little sisters?
Or a mother who's in between jobs and sometimes goes to bed hungry so her kids can have dinner? I am the one in eight Americans who struggle with hunger. I am hunger in America.
Hunger can be hard to recognize. Learn why at IamHungerInAmerica.org. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false. The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested. True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
I'm gonna dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
As you go about your daily life, look closer.
as you gather with family and friends. Look closer. Right in your community, there are youth who don't have the home, warmth, and healing you have. So, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth 50 years strong. Tonight, 2,000 young people will sleep safely in a Covenant House bed. And tomorrow, they will wake up surrounded by love. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in sites across America to help them fulfill the great promise of their lives. So, look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. A winter storm warning begins at midnight tonight and continues until 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Cloudy tonight with snow likely. Lows level off around 30. Northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. High of 31. Tomorrow, snow likely. 22 tomorrow night, chance for snow showers. 5 to 10 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 30.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news, talk, and sports is 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Mike.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Thank you for joining us in your during your lunch hour on this Friday. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And in this noon hour, in the next segment, we're going to do a little headline quiz of the week. See how Jane and I do, is how much news we read this week. You can always play along. And then at 12:30, Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and large carnivore includes wolves.
Yes.
And so he is going to join us. We may have other questions about the black bears and some of the other stuff that he
deals with.
Yeah. But mostly he's going to come and join to talk to us about what's going on with the wolf management plan that is still open for public comment, and also just kind of the history of wolves in Wisconsin?
Yeah, and I'm curious. I can certainly understand why some are opposed to having a wolf population in Wisconsin. But
you have a farm?
If you have livestock and things like that. But there are pros to this as well. So I'm curious to hear him explain that.
Absolutely. And then I've been wanting to do this all week. So hopefully we'll slip this in at the end of the hour. But TSA's weirdest finds of 2022. They're mostly like a combination of just interesting ways to hide weapons or drugs. But people are creative.
They are.
And so good on some of those TSA folks really knowing what to look for and the things to touch and squeeze and open up.
And can I just say, they're not paid nearly enough.
I have no idea what they're paid.
Because I looked a number up several years ago and just out of curiosity. And I think the base pay is only like in the mid 30s.
Well, it's also interesting because there's also a flip side of like, because it's not very high. There's also sometimes people who are there. It's like TSA isn't always
their best
as far as, I remember, I think it was last year that there were some weird rules around like, pumped milk, like breast milk. And, it's obviously liquid that has to make it through TSA. And there's this woman who went viral talking about her really, I don't know, traumatic's kind of overused these days, but like really crappy, like
experience
with TSA and what they said the rules are, and that she had to like throw away all this like milk that she had just pumped. And like, even though she's a new mom, and it was, So like, I'm not giving them a full pass, but this will be interesting to go through that list. But to start off with, I say this as someone who is married to a Mike and has a best friend named Mike. As you can imagine, and we've just discussed this previously, that alone can be confusing. I have to have them listed in my phone as two separate people.
Sure.
With not the name Mike. My argument is that we have too many Mikes. We don't need any more Mikes.
Just zeroing in on Mike in particular.
Particularly that name. We have too many Mikes. And if for no other reason than in the House, you know, we've talked a lot about the House now that...
The 118th?
The 118th House of Representatives in the Capitol. There will now be more guys named Mike than women chairing committees under the new Republican majority.
Oh, that's so not surprising.
So, House Republicans have announced this week the slate of committee chairs for new Congress. Six of them will be chaired by a man named Mike or Michael. Meanwhile, just three will be chaired by women.
And they're not all named Anne or something,
nope,
right?
They don't
share a first name.
And I just, you know, I think it's because there's an oversaturation of that name. It's nothing to do with the fact that there's not enough women in the GOP or
anything like that.
Or anything like that, or giving the deserving women in the GOP more power. It's just because the name Michael is overused. I think that's my takeaway from this.
All right.
From this observation.
The bold stance.
And there's so many other great names. And they don't have to be like hipster crazy names. I'm not pregnant, but you know, I was looking at the names I have saved for like boys' names.
Okay.
And like Beckett, Gabriel, Toby, Bobby, Clark. There's so many names, and they don't have to be like Phineas or whatever, you know, some of those crazy ones. Eric, Hank. Let's bring Hank back. I love the idea. I kind of love the idea of naming a little kid like Hank or Frank or what, like just like a toddler running around like being like, Frank, come here.
Old guy name?
Yes. I mean, our dog's named Cliff, so. But, you know, I bring this up partially because it's hilarious and also because, you know, I think it's hard to be a woman in politics no matter what, no matter which party you're in. I think the amount of threats you get against you is higher. I think the expectations of what everything you're supposed to encapsulate, and you can't be too domineering, but you have to be respected and all this stuff. I think no matter which party you're in, it's very hard to be, it's harder to be a politician and a woman. And I'm not a politician, period. But I would be willing to bet it's a lot harder to be a woman in the GOP than a Democrat. And interestingly enough, in the same week that this story about how few women will be chairing committees in Congress compared to men named Mike, Rebecca Clayfish, emerging from her sabbatical?
Yeah.
Is that what we want to call it?
I would have called it a cocoon.
This was even in December after the election. She kind of came out and she's back heading up the 1848 Project, and which was her thing before it was her unofficial, not at all tied to her campaign.
Right.
But what she was doing before she actually launched her campaign. And so now she's trying to recruit more conservatives to run. And with that, more women to run. So this was a story by Molly Beck yesterday in Milwaukee Journal Sentinel.
It's a good piece.
It is a good piece, but it's like one of those things where I'm reading it, and I've been vocal that while I don't politically agree with Clayfish, I think it's embarrassing for the party how much they backdoored her. But she said in this article, Clayfish wants to help more women run for office after shocking treatment of family. And the article goes into what she talks about and what she highlights as being the shocking treatment of her family I'll say the story before I give my opinion. Her daughter went to a dance with Brian Hagedorn's son.
Supreme Court Justice,
who was this deciding vote for the Donald Trump election, one of the lawsuits as far as recounting and overturning the election in 2020. And
Hagedorn voted against
overturning the election. Against Donald Trump, basically. Yep. And at one point, Rebecca had tweeted out a picture of them going, their kids going to a dance together. And because Donald Trump is a petty person, he used that, supposedly he used that against Rebecca Clayfish in his endorsement of Tim Michaels instead of Clayfish. And that in most of this article, and this was a interview she gave with Wisconsin Eye this week of how poorly her kids were treated and how she thinks she is a shining example of why women don't want to get into politics, because why would you want to put your family through that? Which is all true. Like, everything she said was true.
Yep.
But I feel like she's not saying the actual thing.
Which is
that her party backdoored her so badly. And I feel like that, because I don't feel like that story about the kids got that much attention. Like, it was there. But I feel like the bigger cautionary tale is with the stakes that high, your party didn't think you could win. And so at the last minute, they pulled in someone else who also didn't win. And like, that's the part that she's like, the fact that she's pointing to how her family was treated instead of how she was treated.
Right.
It's like, cause she obviously still wants to be part of the party. And the whole thing of like party over, like in like this facade of helping women and we should get women to run. And like, I can understand why they don't want to run because of their families. Like, it's like, no, they don't want to. I mean, people don't want to run because this party is inherently misogynistic and will not lift in this state, has not lifted up women in your party very well to positions of power.
Right.
I mean, there are, I think, of the women who are in the state legislature right now, like 61% are Democrats. So there are women Republicans that have been elected.
But they don't head anything.
What do they head? I mean, and especially now Janelle Branchon just got kicked off. Alberta Darling is retiring. You know, some of the names that I feel like come to top of the head faster. But I think it's like you're almost there. Like, you almost got it in this story, but you're not willing to actually say the thing that really happened.
Well, and I do find it interesting that after her experience, that she would think that any woman that she can encourage to go into politics for Wisconsin Republicans is going to be treated any better.
I know.
How do you sell that?
Because there was no, I mean, there's certain, I'm sure there's conversations amongst behind closed doors of looking at what happened and Michaels versus did we back the wrong horse and stuff like that. But I think they didn't believe that a woman could win. And whether they want to say it was just the people who opted to back Michaels with only 3 months, like 3 months ahead of the primary, 4 months ahead of the primary, was because they didn't think she could win because of who she is as her background and character and stuff, and regardless of her gender, or if they just didn't think a woman could win. But that is, I read it and I was like, you're almost there.
So near.
But it is, I mean, because I think the kids thing, no matter what, you face that when your family is on the line, no matter what. But anyways, all right, well, we're going to take another break. When we come back, a little quiz. How closely were you paying attention to the news this week? Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
K-E, Mike, Mike, Mike. Mike, 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 M-I-K-E, Mike, M-I-K-E, Mike, M-I-K-E, Mike, 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 Mike.
From the hometown of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news talk and sports station.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Happy Friday. Well, I think we've kind of come to a nearer end of our news segment for this week. So, you know, we love to do a little bit of a quiz.
Yeah.
How close were we paying attention this week? And this is where we read a question. They're usually multiple choice, and we don't find out the answers until the end. So I'm going to keep track of what our answers are.
Okay.
Let me just get that open. Killing time in case we have different answers.
Because there are valuable prizes at stake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Number one, where did President Biden visit this week for the first time since he took office? A, Ukraine. B, U.S.-Mexico border. C, Taiwan. D, Korean demilitarized zone.
He went to the border.
He did go to the border. We don't even have to wait. We know that one.
We know this.
Which food items prices had the highest jump of all grocery items last year? A, eggs. B, beef. C, citrus fruits. D, butter.
I'm going with eggs.
I think you're right. There's a chance that it's beef. But I think like a percentage jump, it's probably eggs. But we don't know. We'll find out at the end. All right, fill in the blank. IBM lost its place as the top U.S. patent recipient for the first time since 1993 to Apple. I don't know how to pronounce this. What's the big Chinese company?
Huawei.
Thank you. Intel, Samsung.
I'll go Apple.
All right, I'm going to go Samsung. Which previously endangered part of the Earth is expected to mostly return to its pre-crisis state by 2040?
We know this.
Great Barrier Reef, Amazon Rainforest, Ozone Layer, Lake Mead. All four of those not doing great. But,
no.
Ozone Layer.
Go Ozone.
And number five, which U.S. city had the most traffic congestion in 2022, according to analytics firm INRIX? Atlanta, Houston, Los Angeles, Chicago.
I'd go L.A.
I read this article, so I know. Chicago.
Oh, is it?
Well,
we'll find out.
So with the ones that we put in, we got 5 out of 5. All right. You're perfect. Here are the answers. So Biden did indeed visit the U.S.-Mexico border for the first time as president, which kind of surprises me. And he also extended Title 42, which we haven't really covered on this show.
No, we haven't.
As far as it's basically extending a Trump-era law that was basically having people who are coming and seeking asylum having to do so before they actually reach
the border.
And, but I think as we talked to Pam Yonke this week, hopefully we can figure this out soon, because there is a lot of people who, a lot of industries who need labor.
Yes.
And there's a lot of people who want to live here
and work hard.
And so, we'll see how that progresses. But then egg prices, not beef. You were right. Egg prices had the highest jump in the last year in how much they cost. Samsung was the top U.S. patent recipient in the last year. The ozone layer is expected to mostly recover by 2040. And Chicago has the most traffic congestion.
Back to the eggs for just a second. What I have read is that one of the reasons the prices have gone so crazy is because of that avian flu.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
And when you and I, when I first joined the show back in July, I want to say we spoke to someone at one point about trying to keep flocks apart. And it really decimated poultry industries, this avian flu. And that's one of the reasons why your scrambled costs more.
Yeah, well, it's not necessarily just inflation. It's because of actual supply.
Yeah.
I mean, think about what happened. Was that May when the baby formula shortage happened?
Mm-hmm.
And that was not just supply. I mean, it was supply and demand in the way that it was a contaminated batch. And again, because there's basically one company that this is why monopolies are bad.
Yes.
Not just because they can fix prices, but because when they screw up, doesn't leave a lot of options for other companies to come in and ramp that that supply up
so people can actually
get the things that they need. But yeah, so that was fun. But I feel like...
Are you surprised that Chicago is considered worse traffic than Los Angeles?
Have you driven in Chicago?
Not for many years. They scare me.
Chicago scares you?
Chicago traffic scares me.
Just because... Well, also, I mean, I feel like it's... But it is so funny to me. I guess it depends on what they're measuring. Because it's like congestion versus, like, what does that actually qualify as?
Right.
But here's more information on that. So you'd think it'd be Los Angeles or New York, but it turns out that Chicago is the place where people get stuck in traffic the longest. So according to this analytics firm, INRIX, the average Chicago driver lost 155 hours sitting in traffic in 2022.
Wow.
And it was up 104 hours from 2021.
Wow.
And it was marking the second year in a row that Chicago nabbed the top spot in the United States. And so the only cities that are around the world that are more congested is London, which outpaced Chicago with their average driver being stuck in traffic for 156 hours. So only by 1 hour. And I always just think about this as the conversation around the expansion of the I-94 is happening in Milwaukee and the people who are for that and how much they are upset with the traffic. It's like, oh, you don't know what traffic is.
You don't know from traffic, right?
Because, I mean, in the 6 months I've been driving to Waukesha now, I'm not sure it's ever taken me over an hour to get home as far as traffic starting to... Yeah. All right. Well, we're taking another break. When we come back, Randy Johnson will be here to talk about wolves. Stick with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Stop surfing the dial. You've found the greatest station ever. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, children at heart and of all ages.
Start your day laughing with Mornings on WFHR.
7 to 10, Monday through Friday, join your host James and the best co-hosts in radio.
Keep up to date on local news, sports, and weather.
Along with Misty's Menu, Birthday and Anniversary Club, and Friday's Culver's Star of the Day.
Join the conversation weekdays 7 to 10 for Mornings on WFHR. We're a serious comedy to start your day.
Some people won't give you the real talk on drugs, but it's time we know the facts. Fentanyl is killing people. It's a powerful opioid, often made illegally and commonly mixed with illicit drugs. It can even be pressed into counterfeit pills that resemble prescription medications. Just 2 milligrams, about the size of a few grains of sand, can potentially be lethal. This isn't an ad to scare you, but it is an ad to make you think twice. Get the facts. Go to realdealonfentanyl.com. This message is brought to you by the Ad Council.
Victor deployed for the first time to Afghanistan in 2003. At 4 a.m, my phone rang. They said, I regret to inform you that your husband was wounded in action. Victor sustained a moderate traumatic brain injury. I was doing school full time, and I was also then caring for Victor. One of the most important elements of caregiving is taking care of yourself. I just didn't want to forget that I also had goals and that I also had a life. What I did is I challenged Victor to meet me halfway. There are almost 6 million military and veteran caregivers across the nation. We have our own journey, and we can fulfill that journey at the same time that we are helping our loved one.
Visit aarp.org/caregiving for a free military veteran's guide to navigate your caregiving journey and better care for your loved one and yourself. Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
That
was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. How do you locate a support group for widows or housing for an elderly parent? United Way's 211 is free and confidential and provides answers to these questions and more. Dial 211 for community information and referrals, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Childhood should be the happiest time of life, but for many children living in poverty with blindness, facial deformities, and other crippling conditions, it's riddled with pain, rejection, shame, and isolation. At Mercy Ships, we're answering the cries of some of the world's most forgotten children and adults through free, life-changing surgeries, surgeries that turn despair into hope. These once heartbroken boys and girls, and many men and women too, are now restored, accepted, and on their way to a life of opportunity and joy. No one can change the world on their own, but together we can transform it by restoring hope to one person, one child at a time. Volunteers from your community and around the globe are bringing life-changing healing and hope to the forgotten poor. To learn how you too can help change the world, one child at a time, go to mercyships.org today.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio, WFHR. A winter storm warning begins at midnight tonight and continues until 3 p.m. tomorrow afternoon. Cloudy tonight with snow likely. Lows level off around 30. Northeast winds 10 to 20 miles per hour. High of 31. Tomorrow, snow likely. 22 tomorrow night, chance for snow showers. 5 to 10 inches of snow tonight through tomorrow. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 30.
Kristen Bry, no matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. If you miss any part of today's show, you can always listen to it as a podcast, which you can find on asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Stitcher. And you can always join the conversation at 844-967-2789. And I know people have strong, not everyone, but some people have very strong feelings about our next topic. You'll remember that a couple years ago, we made national news with how a wolf hunt was handled, and we are now in the throes of trying to update the wolf management plan. And so here to talk more about that is Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist with Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, and he focuses on statewide wildlife management surrounding black bears, wolves, and the occasional cougar. How occasional are we talking?
A handful a year. A handful a year.
Are cougars like solitary animals? Do they not go in packs? So you kind of just see them when they're roaming by themselves?
That's correct. Yeah, okay. They're a solitary animal. We don't have a breeding population, but what we see here in Wisconsin is individual transients that are coming from the Dakotas, Nebraska, our closest other populations. And so they're trekking out looking for their own territory, and a few make it all the way to Wisconsin.
Wow. Well. You know, they're really, really ambitious. All right. So as someone who's not a large carnivore specialist, what is kind of the history of wolves in Wisconsin? Have they always been native to here? Has there been ebbs and flows of how they migrate? Because obviously what happened a couple years ago was terrible. And we're back in this place of like, what do we do with them? And I understand that there's both the ecosystem that they fulfill, and there's also the threat that they pose to farms and livestock and everything. And so kind of what is the historical nature of wolves in Wisconsin?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks again for having me. I appreciate it. It's kind of a long and at times very controversial and pretty nuanced backstory with wolves in Wisconsin and really everywhere across the country. We're speaking about the historical background of wolves in the state. They are a native species. They would have been here, thousands of years ago, and they were here, all across the state, really all across the lower 48 states, up until about the 1800s, the early 1900s. At that time, when the European colonization and settlement was taking place all across the country, those settlers' attitudes toward wolves and other carnivore species, like mountain lions, for example, were not good. They did not like them around. They saw them as competition, feared them, et cetera. And so we saw, government-sponsored bounty programs, poisoning campaigns. It was a very concentrated effort to get rid of these animals, and it was pretty darn successful. By the early 1900s, most wolves in the state had been eliminated.
Wow.
The same thing played out in our neighboring states until about the 1950s, the 1960s. Really, in the lower 48 states, the only wolf population that remained was in northern Minnesota. Wolves were gone from Wisconsin.
Hmm.
And once we get to the 60s, the 70s, attitudes start to change. People start to appreciate these animals. They start to understand them a little bit better. And importantly, legal protections, the bounties went away, the poisoning went away, and the Endangered Species Act, Keystone legislation, the early 70s. And that sets the stage for where we're at today. Through the 80s, through the 90s, these populations came back on their own, naturally. Again, very similar to what we're seeing with cougars, where you have these individuals that trek out and they start to look for habitats and territories. And when wolves did that, they came out of Minnesota into Wisconsin and they found prey, open habitat, and they found each other. And they started to establish packs. And through the 80s, through the 90s, into the 2000s, we went from, basically zero wolves to a few dozen, to a few hundred, up until today, where we see about 1,000 wolves in the state. And most of the suitable habitat for them today seems to be pretty occupied with wolves. So we've kind of come full circle with wolves in the state.
And so while they were almost eliminated and before their kind of resurgence and coming back and establishing packs, what changes did that make in the food change and to like the ecosystem of like, was that damaging to the larger environment by not having them here?
Yeah, it's a good question. And frankly, a lot of that, I think we're still unraveling, both here in the state, but really all across Wolf Range. As these carnivores start to come back into these systems, you start to see changes. You're introducing a top level predator. In Wisconsin, their primary prey is white-tailed deer. That's what they like to eat the most. There's other critters on the menu, like snowshoe hare, for example, beaver, and they can actually be quite flexible in their diet, but they can eat a number of different things. But, as they're doing, as they're being wolves, right, just going about their daily life, doing their thing, they influence the environment around them in a lot of different ways, both directly through killing some of these animals and consuming them, but also indirectly through changing their behaviors, changing where they're at in the landscape. Like deer, especially, they react to the presence of a wolf by changing their behavior. Maybe they move more at night, or they stay out in the open, or they feed in certain areas less. And a deer is a great example. It changes the browsing pressure, right? And so by deer moving where they're browsing, feeding, you can start to see changes in the vegetation. And generally speaking, you start to see increased plant diversity, and that translates directly into increased biodiversity. With rare species of plants, more species of plants, you get different insects, et cetera, et cetera. And you start to see these almost chain reactions all throughout the landscape, many of which are pretty subtle and take some time. But we continue to study those types of things and continue to unravel all the different the impacts.
So fast forward to today, and obviously I don't have the numbers off at the top of my head, but 2 years ago, it sounds like from what I remember, it was chaotic. Maybe is the right word as far as what was leading up to the wolf hunt that led to the wolf hunt. killing like 80% more than what the threshold was supposed to be or something like that. Can you give more details of what happened that we're trying to not repeat?
Yeah. Long story short, that was the wolves were delisted from the Federal Endangered Species Act, and the department was court ordered to implement a season. And that comes back to current state law, which basically directs us to have a wolf season in Wisconsin whenever they're not federally listed. So that season went off. It was very unusual, I would say, in the way that it came about. Certainly not something that the department wanted to see take place in the way that it played out. But it really brought attention to that issue, more attention to that issue. And so that's one, you know, certainly one part of the management plan that we're updating. You know, there's several pieces in there that directly try to address some of those concerns that we saw from that season, among a lot of other things. The other thing I think that's important to realize, too, is even following that season, you know, the department continues to monitor the wolf population, and based on, you know, surveyed results from the year following that season, we still see a healthy wolf population in the state. It did decline a little bit from, you know, prior to that hunt, which was expected given the nature of it. But nonetheless, we still see wolves largely occupying most of that habitat that's, you know, good quality habitat for them. We still see some 250 packs of wolves in the state. And so, you know, that's another thing we've learned along the way is that wolf populations are pretty resilient to disturbances like harvest or other sources of mortality.
We're talking to Randy Johnson, who is the large carnivore specialist at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, about wolves. And so it's a public comment. Like, it just got extended so that people can still put in their public comment for updating the wolf management plan. So what is kind of the bullet point of the arguments for limiting the wolf, the how many wolves can be hunted versus the arguments for being more aggressive?
Yeah, it in a word, it all comes down to trying to find some balance, right? We kind of discussed a lot of the ecological value that wolves have. We've done social science work that indicates the majority of Wisconsin residents have a cultural appreciation for wolves. They, you know, they're an important part of our state's history, our culture, and so there's a lot of value from that perspective as well. The flip side, of course, is there can be some conflict with wolves. They are a large carnivore. Not only can they obviously take down wild prey, but they can take down cattle, they can kill pets, they can kill, you name it. We don't really see impacts to, you know, human safety concerns, if you will. But nevertheless, that's still a legitimate concern that people have. And so it's really important to understand that those threats, that conflict is real. It is impactful for those that it occurs to. And yet it's, in many cases, manageable. We have the tools in place to really try to address a lot of these things. And so this plan is really focused on trying to find a balance between those two things. We want to support a healthy wolf population in this state, sustainable long-term, but also put a lot of attention on addressing and reducing conflict where it occurs, again, to try to find that balance.
And so with the wolf population, are we talking mostly like Northwest, or is it all of the North, or like where is, like, if you want to see a wolf, where's the most likely place that you're going to be able to see one?
Yeah. Northwest is probably the best place to try to go see one. The Northwest part of the state has probably the highest density of wolves. The wolf range in the state is pretty extensive. It's really all across the forested parts of the northern, you know, northern part of the state, as well as down into the central forest, you know, probably some a third to maybe half of the state, you know, not obviously in every spot, but locally.
Not Milwaukee.
You know, not Milwaukee. No, but we do actually, believe it or not, we have individual wolves that pop up all over the state from time to time. Again, it's the same pattern of healthy wolf population. Young animals trek out on their own. They disperse. And when they take off, they can show up just about anywhere. Now, they're typically transient. They keep moving along. But we have wolf observations pop up all across the state, really every year.
Randy, I assume you do a lot of work in the field. And you must just over the years have seen some really amazing things. Just, I think, to see a wolf pack moving as a pack, or seeing a cougar, or, you know, a bear and cubs, and it's just got to be thrilling and also a little frightening.
Yeah, I don't do as much field work as I'd like to. But nevertheless, yeah, I mean, that's obviously a big part of the job and why folks get into this field. And it's also, again, it comes back to, we know that the general public really appreciates those opportunities to see a bear. I was just talking with a lady yesterday, actually, that spoke about seeing a bear and two cubs, you know, run across the road and how meaningful that was and how impactful that was. And I think the same can be said for wolves in the state. And so we recognize that, we appreciate that. And also recognize we need to try to find this balance because there are some real impacts out there too. And that's what the plan strives to do.
So quickly, just for survival tips, if someone were to see a large carnivore, what are the actual things that you're supposed to do? Because I feel like the urban legend is with a bear, you pretend that you're dead. Or so like, what are, with the things that at least the animals you focus on, what should you do if you were to come across any of these in the wild as a human?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, first things first, I think just pause and recognize that most of the time these animals want nothing to do with you. Pause. The best tool you have is the thing between your ears. And so slow down, pause. You know, if it's a bear, often you just don't care, or a wolf for that matter, you just kind of want to back out of the situation. You don't want to surprise them. You don't want to startle them. Oftentimes it's just that simple. Make sure they have a way out, make sure you can back up. And 99% of the time they're going to resolve themselves if you just calm down and kind of back out of the situation.
All right. Good to know. Disengage.
I still think I'm going to play dead.
You don't care.
I'm curling into a ball and I'm just going to cross my fingers and say goodbye.
All right. Well, Randy Johnson is the large carnivore specialist for the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Thank you so much for updating us. We will link all of the information you sent us as far as where people can provide their public comment, learn more about the situation. And what is the timeline? It's for the end of the month.
End of February.
End of February.
Folks have until the end of February to log on to the website. You said you've got the link. So log on to the website, review the plan, share your thoughts. It's important that we hear from folks on this plan.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much for joining us today. All right. We'll be right back. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
From the home of the Cranberry Blossom Festival, your news talk and sports station is locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
Well, it started. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. Happy Friday. So, I've been wanting to do this all week just because I thought it was fun. But TSA, who among us have not had a very expensive toiletry that you had to throw away, or obviously water bottles? You know, if you travel enough, you know that there's certain things you cannot bring with you.
Don't even try.
There's certain politicians who sometimes forget that they can't bring guns.
Oh, loaded guns.
Airplanes. But there are certain people who know that they're not allowed to bring these things on planes. And yet, they try to sneak them on anyways. And so every year, a number of concealed objects, including weapons and drugs, involve a high level of creativity, sneakiness, or audacity, are inducted into the agency's, being TSA's, top 10 catches.
This is the TSA's list?
This is the TSA's list.
Oh, so someone there has a sense of humor that just doesn't seem to apply.
Transportation Security Administration is what TSA stands for. And so this is the agency spokeswoman, Lisa Farbstein, said, "These are what we call good catches. The list offers recognition to the TSA officers across the country because they catch things." And I just thought, this dates back to 2016, they've been doing this. So let's start with number 10. Cash in crutches at El Paso International Airport.
Did you say crutches?
Crutches, like...
Like crutches.
Like I broke my leg, crutches. Or maybe not leg, but sprained my ankle.
So it's a hollow...
A passenger's crutches triggered the alarm when officers noticed an unusual object in the base of the mobility aid. which I don't know if that's the top or the bottom. But
that would be the bottom.
The bottom, yeah. So the mysterious wad turned out to be literally dirty money, an object that does not fall under TSA's definitions of things that can cause a catastrophic incident on a flight. But I think it's because you can only bring
$10,000.
And so if they were trying to bring in more money and maybe not have to report that, they snuck it into their crutches.
Oh, seemed like such a good idea.
You think they like rolled it?
Yeah.
Like big bills and then they just rolled
and then,
it?
And then stuck them down the,
yeah,
you know.
All right. Number nine. This happened at Mitchell Airport. This happened right in our backyard.
Congratulations.
So good job, TSA at Mitchell Airport. A grenade.
A grenade?
The spokeswoman said officers find a surprisingly high number of hand grenades. Even if it's inactive, you are not permitted because it can create a panic among passengers on the plane. So she recommends stashing the explosive item in your car, handing it over to a non-traveling companion, or surrendering it to the TSA officer, or just maybe leave your grenade at home. But yeah, I guess at Mitchell Airport, they found someone with a grenade.
So many questions. Do you go to Grenades R Us? I mean,
I don't know.
Can you just go?
I'm sure you can order that on the internet.
I'll check with Amazon today.
I'm sure like military buffs have stuff like that, but like, why are you bringing it?
Right. I mean,
if you were bringing it,
exactly. It's your support grenade, your emotional.
And also it's like, I wonder what is the threshold? I don't know if they get into this on like what you pack and check into your suitcase that goes under the plane versus what's on your carry on. I don't know.
Lots of questions about the grenade.
Cattle prods.
Oh,
number eight. Geez. Cattle prods at Washington Dulles International Airport.
Never travel without them.
No. Officers extracted a pair of electric cattle prods tucked inside a guitar case. So not the guitar itself, but a guitar case. The bovine pokers can be are against the rules that forbids tools longer than 7 inches, which could be used as a bludgeon or you can electrocute someone.
Well, hello.
These would have been fine in a checked bag.
The cattle prod?
You can check. Anyone who's at home taking notes about what you can and cannot bring. So you can check the cattle prods into your checked bag.
Okay. But not a carry-on. But no grenades at all.
No grenades at all, apparently. Number seven, a gun in a PlayStation at the Atlanta airport. They found the weapon inside of the video game console, and it was an especially gratifying catch for the TSA. PlayStations don't come with guns in the middle of them, Harpstein said. Number six, drug-filled scrunchies at Boise Airport.
Boise?
Yeah, in Boise. So you remember, scrunchies are kind of... I have some scrunchies at home. They're not maybe as popular as they were in the 80s and 90s, but you think they're like an elastic band that are then covered in fabric. And so there was, let's see.
But you got to put a tube in it or something.
It doesn't say what kind of drugs they were. The pictures of them, those are little blue pills. So maybe it was Molly or ecstasy or something like that.
Fentanyl or something.
Maybe. But yeah. And so they were inside. So that must be when you go through the little x-ray machine. And sometimes, especially when I had longer hair, if it was up in a bun,
yeah.
I've had them go, I need to touch your hair.
Oh, because make sure.
Like, there was just stuff in there.
Make sure there's nothing in there.
Yeah, exactly. And so,
like a grenade.
Or drugs. but yeah, so some woman tried to sneak him in. They got caught in the scrunchie. This one's interesting when you see the picture. At Richmond International Airport, there was a knife in a laptop. So the passenger's bag set off an alarm. The officers had to rescan each item, and they honed in on the laptop. And after unscrewing the covers,
yep,
they removed a knife from the electronic like innards of the computer.
Wow!
And they have a picture of this. I'm reading this from Washington Post for anyone who wants to actually go see the pictures. And it's like a little shanky knife. Wild. All right, number four. Gun in a sling at Greater Rochester International Airport. So the x-ray machine noticed something suspicious about the man with the arm sling. Officers asked him to remove his limb support, and he warned that the sling was a little heavy.
Uh-huh.
And his response to the discovery, I forgot I put it in my sling.
Oh, as one does, Kristen.
It was inches from his skin. How did he forget? Farbstein said. Number three, firearm in peanut butter jar at JFK.
Doesn't that affect the firing mechanism?
Probably. Probably. But I think it looks like it was not fully loaded, so it could fit inside the peanut butter. It was like a big thing of Jif. Again, why are you bringing Jif on the airplane? But whatever. I mean, or a gun. Number two, we're getting to the top because we're running out of time. Gun inside a chicken at Fort Lauderdale Hollywood International Airport.
Not a live chicken.
So instead, no, it's like in the where you put the stuffing.
Okay.
In that hole, they had put a gun.
A gun.
Again, these things. I mean, just tell me you're bringing a raw chicken. And I'm like, why are you bringing this on the airplane, dude? Like, what are you doing? All right, number one, because we only have 30 seconds left. Pills inside candy packaging at LAX. And it's a bag of Skittles that was sealed shut. They thought it was just little candies in there. And everyone knows that Skittles are my favorite. Not Skittles. Not Skittles inside. And they got caught. All right. Well, we're taking a break for the top of the hour news. When we come back, Lori Bertrand, the president and CEO of Ronald McDonald House Charities Northeast Wisconsin, will be here. This is Ask Us Wisconsin.
Wisconsin enjoys a rich history in broadcasting, which we celebrate at the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame. I'm Michelle Vetterkind, president of the WBA. We honor those who have devoted their careers to serving their local communities as legendary broadcasters. They are personalities, owners, engineers, and educators. It's an experience that's free for all to enjoy. Visit the Wisconsin Broadcasters Hall of Fame, located inside the Milwaukee Hilton City Center.
How do you locate a support group, professional association, or local organization? United Way's 211 will provide the answers to these questions and more. 211 is your connection to programs and services in Central Wisconsin. Dial 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In this ever-changing world, it is often hard to find the program or service you're looking for. United Way's 211 can assist you locating services. 211 is free and confidential. Trained referral specialists will help you get connected 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. Every day, people begin a difficult and sometimes desperate search for programs that can provide assistance. United Way's 211 is there to connect you to the programs and services you need. For non-emergency information and referral services, call United Way's 211 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211. With thousands of programs in the database, they can assist you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Dial 211.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's artists supporting artists in their own words.
My name is Juanita Segura, and I was diagnosed in November of 2014 with non-small cell lung cancer. The first time I heard about biomarker testing was actually my husband. He just started researching about lung cancer.
And I found out about biomarker testing, and I'm like, why not? Let's try it.
I'm Dr. Jorge Gomez, thoracic medical oncologist at the Mount Sinai Hospital. Comprehensive biomarker testing is looking for either substances in the blood or mutations in some of the genes of the cancer cells that can help us identify special types of lung cancer that can be treated with what we call targeted therapies.
Letting my children know brought all of us a sense of hope. To give them hope that mom is going to be around to see you grow up. And I promised them that.
Ask your doctor about how comprehensive biomarker testing before treatment may help you and your doctor decide on the best treatment for you. Visit noonemissed.org for more.
A public service message from Longevity Foundation.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
News talk and sports on both sides of the dial from Wisconsin Rapids and beyond. Locally grown radio 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. Aides to President Biden say he won't agree to spending cuts in exchange for a debt ceiling increase. CBS's Stephen Portnoy.
As the national debt hits its statutory cap this week, the Treasury Secretary says extraordinary workarounds should stave off default until late